The downed shuttle had only two other passengers, both obviously station personnel on regular business. Harris tried to relax. The shuttle's battered interior did nothing to promote its passengers' confidence, and endured the rough ride silently. Sure enough, the shuttle station on planet was almost empty. The clerk ignored her request for a communications console and simply led her out the door. A big green truck huffed clouds of smelly exhaust at her, and a thin, dark-haired girl leaned out the window.
You for the stable? The, captain?
Right.
If the girl didn't say her name, she wouldn't, though she could see no watchers. The girl pushed open the other door, and Harris climbed up. She had seen no sign of customs checks. Did they let anyone on and off the planet without even checking identification?
Lady Cecilia's really glad you're here. Sorry about that. Corey was supposed to have fixed the transmission. It's the road, really. It shakes everything loose.
She was already driving at a speed that made Harris nervous, ignoring the warning signs as she approached the road beyond the shuttle port. The truck leaped forward into a gap between another truck loaded with square bales of hay and one hauling livestock. Harris didn't recognize the animals. Dark, large, and hairy.
I'm Drew. I'm one of the grooms, and I always get stuck with the driving.
The truck swayed as she put on speed and overtook the hay truck ahead. Harris found herself staring fixedly out the side window. She didn't want to know about oncoming traffic.
Everyone else has wrecked the truck at least twice. And Mary, that's Meredith Lunn, Lady Cecilia's partner, said I was to do all the driving. Well, don't worry. We've got a load of feed back there. It'll keep us on the road.
Harris tried to unclench her own hands from the seat. If she died in a feed truck driven by a crazed groom, it would at least be unique. No Serrano she'd ever heard of had done that. She began to notice the countryside, the gently rolling terrain, the trees edging fields fenced for horses, the horses themselves.
How is she?
Lady Cecilia? Better. When she got here, she couldn't do more than lie in the bed and twitch. Now she can walk a little, with supports. She can spell things out on a keyboard, and there's a voice synthesizer. She's ridden again.
Ridden?
Well, riding therapy, not real riding. On a horse, though. They tried to fit her with some kind of artificial vision things. Looked like something out of a Monster Adventure entertainment cube. Metal contact lenses. She can feed herself and things like that. Of course, I haven't seen all this. It's what I hear. You taking her away?
Whatever she wants. If she still needs medical care,
she needs to kill the bitch who did it to her.
Harris was startled. Aside from her driving, she had seemed like such a nice girl, not at all violent.
There we are. See the gates?
Harris didn't pick out the gates, surrounded by a thicker clump of trees, until Drew swerved through them. Harris barely grabbed hold in time, but Drew seemed to think the turn routine. On the graveled road, or drive, beyond the gates, Drew slowed down a little and grinned at Harris.
You didn't squeak once. Most outsiders do. That girl Broon, for instance.
Were you testing me, or just being efficient?
A little of both. We're very fond of Lady Cecilia. Wanted to know if her friends were tough enough to do her any good. There's the place.
The place. Brick house and brick and stone stable yard. Harris recognized it from the hollow in Cecilia's study aboard the yacht. Here the horses were real, black and bay and chestnut and gray. Here the stable cat lounged on a pile of saddle pads waiting to be washed. A dog sprawled in the sun. Someone waved to the truck and pointed. Drew swung away from the stable gate to follow a track around one side.
They want the feed in the old barn. Won't take but a few minutes. You can walk through to the house.
Harris felt scared and angry with herself for that. She did not want to see the ruin of the woman she had come to respect and even love. She reminded herself that Cecilia, locked in the dark in a helpless body, must have been more terrified, with more reason. She felt her hands cramping and tried to unclench them. Cecilia was better. She'd been told Cecilia was better. But that single image she'd seen of the motionless body, the expressionless face, stayed in her mind's eye. She could imagine nothing between that and Cecilia well, and Cecilia was a long way from well. She walked through the stable yard, the forecourt, up to the graceful little porch on the big house. She felt she knew it. Cecilia had talked about it enough. But inside, it looked more like a medical center. Parallel bars and weight machines, surrounded by colored mats to the right. Massive gray cabinets that might house anything at all to the left. Ahead were the stairs. And coming down, step by careful step, the tall, lean figure she had been afraid to see lying flat, helpless. Over and under her loose shirt and slacks, Harris could see tubes and wires, the structure and electronic connections that let her walk. One hand clamped to the rail, and the other lay atop a box-like machine attached to the wide belt around her waist. Her eyes looked odd. Some kind of contact lenses, Harris decided, though they looked opaque. A headband flickered, red and green. What was that? Beside her, but not touching her, was a competent-looking woman with dark hair in a thick braid. She looked up and smiled at Harris.
You must be Captain Serrano. We heard Drew's truck go by.
Yes, I am. I'm glad to see you up again, m'lady.
Clearly, it was a struggle to smile. The movement of her face was deliberate. Her left hand moved over the top of the box at her waist.
I'm glad to see you. I heard you driving in.
Harris couldn't think what to say. She wanted to stare, to figure out what each blinking light, tube, and cable was for, but she didn't want to embarrass Cecilia.
How is my ship?
Harris shook herself. She could certainly talk about the ship.
She's a mess, frankly. I don't know how much you've heard. We had to yank her out of the decorators, bare naked, and make a run for it. The king asked a favor of me. It was hinted that my taking it would ensure your safety.
And you did it?
I'm working on it. Perhaps you'd like to sit down?
That ungainly figure poised on the stairs made her nervous.
I want to go.
Harris scowled, uncertain what Cecilia meant and unwilling to ask. The other woman on the stairs touched Cecilia's arm lightly.
May I explain? You said it was urgent.
Yes.
Cecilia continued her slow, difficult progress on down the stairs. The other woman moved with her but spoke to Harris.
Lady Cecilia's competency hearing ended yesterday. She's recovered her memory of the incident that started all this some weeks ago, including who administered the drug, but she hasn't told the court yet. She didn't want that person to know she had the memory because it imperiled her family.
Back on Rockhouse, where's Brun?
She sent Brun, as soon as she recovered the memory, to warn her family, discreetly, against the individual. Anyway, because of the competency hearing, the person who injured her now knows where she is. And because the magistrates ruled in her favor, her ID is now flagged active on the universal data nets. She has to presume the individual knows that and will take action. None of us feel that Rotterdam is safe for her anymore. Passenger service is infrequent, and in her condition, she still needs medical attendance. We had thought of sending her off on the same ship that carried her lawyers, but that ship is known.
That's easy. The yacht looks terrible right now, but it's roomy and safe, and we're not using its original ID beacon. How many people will she need along?
But if they've seen you at the spaceport...
The station master saw to it that no one did. The only one of my crew who has permission to leave the ship is a woman who joined us the day we left Rockhouse. They won't associate her with me or Lady Cecilia. Let's get things packed and on the way.
Lady Cecilia, how soon could you be ready to leave?
Now. Go, pack. Let me talk to Harris.
We'll need comfort items. We have only minimal bedding. You might want to load that sort of thing.
She told me her yacht had had a swimming pool. Is that operational?
Yes. Though again, the walls in the gym are bare. We had the pool filled in the Guerni Republic. And that's what I wanted to tell you, m'lady. The doctors believe that the neurochemical assault you suffered is very similar to what was done to the prince. If so, it may be reversible. However, they will need a detailed history and your own tissues to work on. I can take you there if you want to risk it.
Yes, I trust you.
The big, sprawling house that had seemed to be dozing in the afternoon sun erupted like a kicked anthill. Harris crouched on the bottom step of the stairs, holding Cecilia's hands in hers, until someone fetched another chair for her. Four or five women in blue tunics bustled in and out, up and down the stairs. Boxes and suitcases began to accumulate in the front hall as the sun slanted farther and farther through the windows into the room.
I knew you would come. Brunn knew you had to leave.
I'm sorry I couldn't get you out right away. Your family blamed me, and I didn't even know about the bequest.
No, it's all right.
The lift opened, and out came two women, a hover chair, and another stack of boxes. Two men came in from outside and began carrying the growing pile out to the driveway. Harris winced at the thought of Cecilia at the mercy of Drew's driving. The lift came down again, this time with what looked like a hospital bed folded up. A woman in a big apron appeared at their side with trays.
Milady, time for your snack.
Harris watched as Cecilia managed to find the food on her plate and get it into her mouth without incident.
Milady, I'm sorry, but are those artificial eyes?
No, not exactly. Ask medical.
Cecilia went on eating. Harris was suddenly ravenous and found herself engulfing one thick sandwich after another.
Where and how did Cecilia find another great cook?
I should see about the shuttle schedule.
Don't worry about that. I called Annie, and she'll make sure we've got one. She thinks we should wait until the opposition lawyers have left.
Shadows chased the sun across the driveway and up the front of the house, leaving the windows clear to a distant blaze of sunset behind trees. Harris stood up to stretch and walked outside. Fine brushes of cloud high overhead. A shaggy dog stood up to look at her, then shook itself and wandered away, tail wagging gently. So peaceful here. She wanted to stretch out and sleep the night away. The caravan started for the shuttleport well after dark. Harris, breathing in the fresh, damp air, found herself wishing she could stay longer. She rode with Cecilia, two of her medical team, and a lawyer in a real car. Drew drove the truck with supplies and equipment. Another car carried the rest of the medical team, and the cook. The lawyer had kept Cecilia busy all evening. They could not risk alienating the magistrates with her disappearance. Calls and letters had been necessary. Now he was taking notes on her orders for the next few months. Who could vote which stock in which company? What to do if Berenice and Gustav tried to interfere further in the recovery of her competence status? Harris marveled at Cecilia's energy. She looked old, sick, exhausted. But she pushed herself, kept going, stayed alert. Harris dozed, half ashamed of that, but knowing she had a long watch ahead when she must be alert. Although it was nighttime, the shuttleport looked dark and almost deserted. Harris wondered what had gone wrong. Then someone came out of the dimly lit terminal and leaned into the driver's side of their car.
Oh, it's you. Just go out on the runway. Follow the yellow lights.
In this way, the caravan trundled down a long runway to a dark shape bulked at the end of it. Harris felt she'd fallen into some surrealistic action-adventure. She had never, even in dreams, imagined herself sneaking along a darkened runway toward a clandestine shuttle. And she had a burning curiosity about what Cecilia could possibly have done to generate this level of loyalty on the planet. She had no time to ask while the truckload of gear was put aboard the shuttle's cargo bay, while she and the medical team carefully eased Cecilia and her attachments into the shuttle's shabby passenger compartment. They were not the only passengers, either. After Cecilia and her party were aboard, half a dozen others climbed up and settled themselves at the back of the passenger space. Perfectly ordinary, the sort of people you'd expect to find taking a shuttle flight up from the surface of any planet. Except, Harris noticed, they all had remarkably similar bulges in their clothes. At the station, Harris noticed that one of the chartered passenger ships had gone, and the corridors were almost deserted. Everyone, including the shuttle's other passengers, helped unload the shuttle and move its cargo to the yacht. There, Harris found Annie, off duty, as she explained, and Oblo lounging in the loading area.
I thought I told you to stay aboard.
Oblo gave her his innocent look, and she winced inwardly.
I am aboard, legally. There's the line. I was chatting with Annie here on the station call, and we discovered some mutual interest, so when she got off shift, she came over.
Right, fine. Now let's get our owner on board and her gear installed.
Oblo looked hurt, another of his certified expressions, and vanished up the access tube. Annie gave Harris a cheerful grin, intended to disarm.
Thought you wouldn't mind if I came around and made sure your lady's ship was secure. Just in case those lawyers snooped, although since all our exterior videos seem to be on the blink right now.
Amazing how equipment around here seems to behave. For instance, the shuttle tonight...
had a block in the hydraulic line to the steering of the nose wheel. They couldn't seem to get it to roll into the usual parking slot and decided it was safer to keep it on the straight runway.
And yet they felt it was safe enough to fly?
It got you here, didn't it? And if any nosy person was looking for unusual activity, all they saw was a dark field.
Harris nodded, not bothering to mention that any decent surveillance gear would pierce the darkness like a needle into wax. But Annie must know that.
It was most convenient.
Well, we hope so. By the way, that tech you had running errands for the ship, Scoterin, isn't it? One of those lawyers stopped her and talked to her for a few minutes. I'd given her warning they might be coming through, but I guess she was curious or something.
I'll talk to her. They'd been briefed, of course. I'm sure she said something appropriate, but I'll check.
Do that. M'lady, oh, it's good to see you again. And you do look so much better.
To Harris, Cecilia looked pale and exhausted. But Annie would have seen her the first time she came through, she realized. She must have looked much worse then. Now, Cecilia struggled and achieved a smile.
Thank you, Annie.
Behind Cecilia came the trail of people pushing dollies loaded with equipment, luggage, odds and ends. Harris left Cecilia with her medical people and Annie and went on into the ship to get the crew ready for departure. To Oblo, who had been hovering in the access tube as if afraid he'd missed something, she gave the task of directing traffic.
Brigdis, we're going to want a fast but very safe course back to the Guarni Republic.
Harris was glad to see that Sirkin looked bright-eyed and capable again. She had done much better on the trip from Guarni, and Harris hoped whatever had been wrong was now over and done with.
We don't want to take any chances with the Benignity, not with our decoy clone and Lady Cecilia aboard. Methlin, I want our weapons ready but not lit. If we do run into trouble, I want to be able to surprise them. Make sure standby mode is really standby.
I've got this course plotted already, Captain.
Harris looked at the string of numbers and the display. She realized she was too tired to follow through all the calculations.
Did you check this with Oblo?
No, ma'am, not yet. He's not been back to the bridge this watch. Vivi got me the latest data from the station master's nav file. I thought if she went for it instead of calling in, nobody could tap the line.
Good idea.
For an instant, Harris wondered why Annie hadn't mentioned that when she was talking about Scoterin. But Annie was off watch now and might have been when Sirkin requested the data. It didn't really matter. The outside communications board blinked, and Harris reached for it.
Captain Serrano, this is Station Master Tadeus. If Annie's still over there, would you ask her to come to the office? I've got a question for her.
Harris wondered why he hadn't used the station paging system.
Of course.
Sort of a confidential thing. Nothing to worry you, though. More like a filing problem.
I'll tell her right away. What about clearance for departure?
I'd like 5 minutes, just to make sure nobody's coming up for a shift change. 10 if you can give it to me, otherwise you're clear.
Just like that. Harris had never heard of anything so casual anywhere.
I'll tell Annie.
Annie was still chatting with Cecilia. The tail end of the equipment train was just about to enter the access tube.
Station Master Tadeus asked me to tell you he'd like to see you in the office.
Well, then why didn't he... Sorry, m'lady, but I'd better scoot. Hope to see you again soon in even better health. Bye, Captain.
And Annie took off down the corridor much faster than her looks suggested.
I've got to go back aboard, m'lady. We'll be able to depart once everything is aboard and stowed.
And how long will that be?
I'm not sure. I'd guess less than an hour. Lady Cecilia can come aboard now, but there's no place to sit, really. No furniture except what's just come aboard.
Better there than here.
Cecilia's hands moved on the hover chair controls, and the chair lifted, swaying slightly.
Good idea.
Harris felt stupid not to have realized that Cecilia didn't need any other chair to sit on. Inside, the ship was in chaos. The woman with Cecilia locked down the hover chair in the lounge and went to help the others arrange Cecilia's suite. Harris saw the clone looking out of his quarters and beckoned.
Here, why don't you keep Lady Cecilia company until we're ready to leave? Lady Cecilia, this is Gerald B. Smith, one of the prince's doubles. Mr. Smith, Lady Cecilia DeMartus.
Gerald B. smiled at her and gathered some bright-colored pillows to make himself a soft seat on the bare decking.
Yes, ma'am. Lady Cecilia, I'm delighted to meet you again. We've met, though I was at the time impersonating my prime, the prince.
I shall call you Mr. Smith.
Harris decided they'd do well enough alone and went back to her own work. Petrus had the engineering figures ready for her. Hydar had computed the new load on the environmental system, well within its capabilities, and had a projection for the supplies that would be needed at Guerny. Mahari and Janice were discussing the exact amount of power necessary to keep the weapons just below scannable levels.
Not Guerny scans, of course. We know about them now. I think they'd know if the toothpick in your pocket was intended for offensive use. Maybe they read minds, do you think?
I don't think. Mind reading is a myth. I just wish we had their capability. But you think our stuff isn't scannable by normal means?
We could ask the station master to look us over.
No. So far I've seen no sign that anyone on this station or this planet wishes Lady Cecilia ill, but why take chances? I'll trust your judgment.
She reminded herself that she wanted to speak to Skoderin, but Skoderin was busy in the guts of the ship, resetting flow rates to accommodate the larger load on the environmental system. Hydar, on his way to help her, said he'd give her the word once all the chores were finished.
No hurry.
In fact, it was a duty so low in priority that she didn't put it into her desk comp for a reminder request. Getting the Sweet Delight back into deep space and a jump or so away from Rotterdam was all that really concerned her. She did a final walkthrough inspection after the last loaders left, and Lady Cecilia was settled in her bed in her own suite. Everything looked as it should, her crew alert and at their stations, and nothing lying around where it shouldn't be. Undock had none of the ceremony she was used to. No financial records to clear, no lists of regulations to follow. She wondered what would happen if any sort of government inspection ventured this far from the center of Familius space. Did they ever? Could Annie or Tadeus adhere to rules? What rules, if they found it necessary? But with the yacht in in-system drive and the station receding in the distance, she put that out of her mind. However it was run, by whatever gang of independents, that station wouldn't be there without some kind of discipline. Its air had been good, its water plentiful, its power supply and gravity control steady. The docking collars had held pressure, so what was she fretting about? Harris grinned as she realized what it was. She had spent so many years putting up with boring, routine double and triple checks because she had believed them necessary. Without them, stations would fall out of the sky, air would fail, spacecraft would go boom. And here was someone ignoring, or at least seeming to ignore, the usual precautions, and doing very well anyway. She resented the time she'd wasted. She also resented the return of Sirkin's mysterious problem. Nothing happened on her first shift, but as they were approaching the first jump point, Oblo reported that Sirkin had left an open circuit in the communications control mechanism. Not a fatal error, yet, but a sign of carelessness. Harris was furious when he called her about it. Enough was enough. She'd replace Sirkin when they got to Guerny. She flung off the covers and dressed, thinking how to say it and how to explain to Lady Cecilia. It was simply too bad to have to bother her now in her condition. When she was dressed, she went to the bridge, where the tension needed no words to express. Janice nodded at her, and Kulkul handed her the log, with Oblo's entry. All three of them looked as upset as she felt. Harris read it and looked at the circuits herself. Anger and sorrow both. She hated to see someone with potential go bad, but that's what Sirkin was doing.
Have Sirkin report to my office.
The Sirkin who appeared seemed to be the bright-eyed, alert Sirkin she had first worked with, the young woman who should have had a successful career ahead of her.
Yes, ma'am?
She was even smiling, and nothing in her manner suggested any concern about her own duties. Harris handed her the log.
Can you explain that entry, Ms. Sirkin?
The formality wiped the smile from Sirkin's face. She reached for the log with the first signs of uncertainty.
But I... It can't be!
I assure you, Miss Sirkin, that Mr. Vasisuan neither lies nor makes elementary mistakes. You signed off your shift, he found the open circuit. Those are facts. I asked for an explanation.
I don't know how it happened. Captain, I swear I didn't leave any circuits open. But I know Oblo wouldn't make it up. I don't know.
Harris picked up the log Sirkin had dropped.
Miss Sirkin, my patience has run out. Whatever your problems, I don't want them on my ship. You will be released from contract when we arrive at Guernsey. Until then, Mr. Vasisuan will serve as nav first. You will perform such duties as Mr. Vasisuan and Mr. Guar can oversee. You can expect to have your work checked very carefully, and any more lapses will be reflected in my statements to any future employer. You have done good work in the past. I hate to handicap you with a bad reference, but I'm not going to risk lives. Do you understand?
Sirkin had gone so pale, Harris was afraid she might faint.
Yes, ma'am.
You may go. You're off shift now. See if you can pull yourself together in time to be of some help to Issy Guar next shift.
Yes, ma'am.
Sirkin left with the gait of someone who has just taken a bad wound and hasn't felt it yet. Harris wanted to clobber the girl and cradle her at the same time. What a waste of talent. If she could only clear her head. But she'd learned early in her career that you could spend only so much time trying to rehabilitate losers. Get rid of them and get on with the job, which right now meant getting Lady Cecilia and Mr. Smith safely to the Guernsey Republic. She went back to the bridge.
Oblo, you're now nav first and Issy's your second. I don't want Sirkin standing any watches alone. She's to back up Issy during jumps next watch and do any other routine work you and Issy can check.
Yes, Captain.
He looked angry, but she knew it was more with circumstances than either Sirkin or herself. He had liked Sirkin, they all had, and they all felt betrayed by her failures.
Good idea, Captain. I know you and Petrus both liked her, and I had nothing against her before, but we can't risk anything now.
Mary's really mad. She thought a lot of the girl.
So did I. Now, with Sirkin off any solo watches, Nav's going to be as short as the rest of you.
Navigation communication had had three to the other sections, too, but no one had minded.
If you need help up here, grab Skoderin from Hydar. She's capable of watching aboard for a few minutes.
And she's fleet. We know we can trust fleet, at least our old crew.
Right. Now, I think whatever's wrong with Sirkin is psychological, personal, but there's the smallest chance it's not. We know her lover was killed by compassionate hand, Bravos. We know her lover may have been recruited by that woman you saw, Oblo.
That counselor.
Right. It's just barely conceivable that Sirkin was recruited too, then or later, perhaps terrorized after Irulan's death. And if so, she could be working for the Benignity. I don't want her near the communications. They'll have a hard time finding one little yacht bouncing around jump after jump, but not if someone's got us lighted up for them.
What about that course she laid out? What if it's wrong? Takes us into CH space or something.
Check it. She said, let me think, that Skoderin brought her up-to-date chart data from the station master's office. Let's ask Skoderin.
Skoderin, roused from her off-shift sleep, arrived on the bridge looking only mildly puffy around the eyes.
Yes, ma'am. I did go over to the station master's office for Miss Sirkin. Made sense to me. We didn't want to use the station voice comm without knowing if anyone could listen in. That other shuttle had come with the lawyers from Lady Cecilia's competency hearing.
Ah, yes. Annie mentioned that you'd talked to one of them. What happened?
Yeah, one of them stopped me and wanted to know what ship I was off of. Guess they noticed the station employee's uniform on the way down or something. I told him just what you had said was our story. We're the Harper Valley, I said, and told him we were an independent freighter picking up a load of frozen equine sperm and embryos. Wanted to know where we were bound next, and I said, wherever the captain wants, I reckon. I'm just a mole. They didn't know what that meant, and I told them environmental tech, and they said, what was our captain's name? And I said, he was a sorry son of a bitch named Levati, which was all I could think of at the time. They said, did we work for Lord Thornbuckle? And I said, I wished. And they said, oh, never mind, she doesn't know anything we want to know. And they went off, and so did I.
I wonder why they asked about Lord Thornbuckle. Unless they figured out that it was Brune who brought Lady Cecilia here. Good job, Vivi. They may find out that Levati is an RSS captain, but it won't do them much good. Now, about the charts and things you picked up.
Yes, ma'am. Got those from the station master and came back without running into any more of those people and gave the data to Miss Serkin.
Harris noted that the formality in referring to Serkin came easily to Skoderin. She pointed to the data cube and hard copy on Oblo's desk.
Is this what you gave her?
Yes, ma'am. Of course, I don't know what it means. Jump points and stuff, but not what.
Well, that's fine, then. Go on back to bed.
When Skoderin had left the bridge, Harris turned to Oblo.
Check the course Serkin laid in against those sheets and make sure she actually used the current data. I don't want us stumbling into Benignity space because of Serkin's carelessness.
Yes, ma'am.
Oblo went to work. Harris sat there, wishing she were back in bed with Petrus, but knowing it was too late. It seemed their jinx had returned. Besides, something nagged at her. Skoderin's story had been plausible, and Skoderin wasn't the problem anyway. So what could Serkin have been up to, besides getting current data? Had she known the lawyers were aboard the station just then? Had she wanted Skoderin to be seen and questioned? If, somehow, she had managed to let them know that the ship in dock was Cecilia's yacht, then getting Skoderin out there to be seen was one way of giving the enemy a complete crew list. They already knew about the others. She had counted on Skoderin going unrecognized, and now they knew about Skoderin, too. That didn't satisfy her either, but she could not reconcile the two Serkins, the two possible explanations for sending Skoderin out. Next main shift, Cecilia sent for her. Harris came into Cecilia's suite to find her sitting up in the hover chair, an attendant with her.
We didn't have time to explain all Lady Cecilia's signal system to you.
Lady Cecilia, always good to see you.
Bev will help you.
Fine. I'll be glad to learn whatever I can. Are you interested in what's been happening with your ship?
Cecilia's shoulder jerked. Was that a response?
That is Lady Cecilia's easiest way to say yes. Lady Cecilia, show her no.
That was the other shoulder. Harris realized that what she had taken for uncontrollable twitching in the shuttle on the way up had been Cecilia talking.
Right shoulder for yes and left shoulder for no?
Cecilia gave a quick jerk of her right shoulder.
I got that. What's next?
What next took longer to learn, but an hour later, Harris was a good bit more comfortable with twitches, jerks, hand clenches, and the timbre of the synthesized voice. Cecilia had even allowed her to hear her own voice. Distorted, uneven in volume and pitch, but her biological voice.
I'm amazed. I confess, I hadn't imagined anything like this. It's so different from...
From the inert helplessness she'd been told of, or the full recovery of a feisty, healthy woman that she'd hoped for.
We didn't dare try a regen tank. Use of regen tanks with neurological problems is tricky at best. You sometimes get good responses, but more often the deficit hardens, as it were. Much safer not to try it until neurochemical repair's been done. Then it's fine for dealing with residual physical deficits.
I see.
Harris remembered that she had more information on the techniques the Guerny Republic doctors had suggested.
I'm going to download everything I got in the Guerny Republic to your desk comp. Or...
Yes, a firm response. Harris wondered if the visual prosthesis allowed her to read displays or could be hooked to a computer output, but she didn't like to ask. The attendant seemed to recognize her discomfort.
I can read it to Lady Cecilia. Her visual capacity is fairly blunt at this time.
Mr. Smith is Prince.
No, he's the Prince's double. Didn't I say that? I'm not sure where the Prince is.
Not double. He is Prince.
Lady Cecilia...
Even though several dozens of people now knew about the clones, Harris was reluctant to discuss them in front of an attendant she didn't know.
Even though I admit he looks like the Prince and sounds like the Prince, I have been informed by... reliable sources that he is not the Prince.
Clone.
M'lady, clone doubles are, as I'm sure you know, illegal.
Not my question.
Whatever her employer had lost, none of it had been intelligence points, or the determination to find out what she wanted to find out. Harris mentally threw up her hands.
Yes, m'lady, he's a clone. Moreover, there are several clone doubles.
Quickly, as clearly as she could, she explained the King's mission, her problem with the clones on Navarne, and the discovery that Levati's ship had yet another one.
And we don't know which, if any, is the Prime. The Prince. They call him their Prime. They all have the same memories. They're given deep conditioning tapes after each separation so that they're up to date.
If all alike doesn't matter.
Harris had privately thought this for some time. Why not just declare one of the capable clones the Prince and quietly retire the damaged Prince? The answer, of course, was that someone might have planned just that, and the apparently capable clone could be someone's pawn. So might the Prince.
We left two of them at Guerny and brought along one as a decoy for the safety of those in the medical center. If Sirkin hasn't botched our course, we'll have them all back together and then let the doctors sort it out. If they can.
Cecilia scowled, as difficult an operation as her smile.
That nice Sirkin. What is wrong?
I don't know. You remember her lover was killed. Well, I made allowances for that. She seemed to be coming out of it, doing better, until after we'd left Navarne. Then she started making careless mistakes, doing sloppy work.
Harris still couldn't reconcile the Sirkin who did the calculations for those emergency jumps with someone who would forget to make necessary log entries, leave switches on the wrong settings, and so forth.
I'm canceling her contract when we get back to Guerny. I won't risk your life, or mine, for that matter, on someone like that.
No. No mistaking that answer.
Lady Cecilia, I must. I liked her, too. You know I did. But a navigator's error can kill the whole crew. I've talked to her, Oblo's talked to her. We've all tried to help her. She made another serious mistake after we left Rotterdam. I can't take the chance.
Wrong. You are wrong.
I wish I were.
Harris debated telling Cecilia of her other suspicions about Sirkin and decided against it. If the girl merely had personal problems, she would not want to have planted other ideas. Time would tell. Besides, Cecilia was a fine one to give warnings. She had ignored Harris's warnings, and look what happened. She glanced at the wall display.
I'm sorry, but I need to get back to the bridge. We can discuss Sirkin later. We're coming into a series of critical jumps to circumnavigate Compassionate Hand territory.
When she returned to the bridge, Skoderen smiled at her from the secondary nav board, and Sirkin was nowhere to be seen. Fine. If Issy and Oblo felt more comfortable with an old crewmate there instead of an unstable civilian, she'd accept that. The first three jumps went without incident. Here, the Benignity had thrust a long arm into former familiar space, but since there were no habitable worlds in the area, no response had been made. It was easy enough to jump over the Compassionate Hand corridor. In fact, it set up a nice series of jumps to avoid the rest of the Benignity. The only tricky part was a rotating gravitational anomaly in the neighborhood of the fourth jump point. After bouncing through the first three jumps, it was necessary to drop into normal space and time the next jump to avoid the rapid G-changes of the anomaly's active arm. Current charts, such as those Skoderen had picked up from Rotterdam Station, gave ships the best chance to get through that fourth jump with the least wasted time. A mistake in timing could send a ship directly into the Benignity, and the Benignity was known to take advantage of any such lapses. Harris reviewed the charts several times before that critical fourth jump to make sure their course would not take them too close to the Benignity. Even if it did, they should be safe. They were small, fast, and it would be sheer bad luck if anyone were patrolling the area where they might emerge. She had Oblo check and recheck the course too, both against the charts and against older references.
The new one's a bit closer, but the border shifts over there with the anomaly and all. I'd say this was fine.
Very well.
They dropped back into normal space on the mark. Oblo pulled up scan data at once.
Son of a bitch!
Harris didn't have to ask. Something, and she wouldn't wager it was sheer bad luck, had gone wrong.
We're off course. Way off course.
He threw the display up on the main screen.
We should be there.
A green circle, fairly near the red dashed line that represented the border of the Benignity.
And instead we're here,
Another green circle. This one not so close to the red dashed line, on the opposite side.
We're entirely too near a gas giant to play games with jumps out. We'll have to crawl it.
Just what system are we in?
Oblo was scrolling past entries in the reference library, looking for a chart with more detail.
Nothing we want to be in. Not good. Not good at all. The Benignity has bases on the larger moons of this big lump of gravity we're too close to. And the way we dropped out of jump space on their doorstep, they could hardly miss us.
Neither Janice nor Meharry turned from their boards.
It can hardly be an accident. Coming out right on top of a Benignity base, it has to be...
I know.
Harris swatted down the last of her regrets and touched the control that would lock Sirkin in her quarters. For all the good that would do now, at least she couldn't cause any more mischief. Then she opened the ship's intercom and explained, as briefly as she could, what had gone wrong.
I want Mr. Smith and Lady Cecilia protected while we have any options at all.
There weren't any options, if the compassionate hand responded. She would ask Lady Cecilia out of courtesy, but was sure she'd prefer death to being a compassionate hand captive. As for Mr. Smith, he could not be allowed to fall alive into their hands.
Captain, ships are on us and their weapons are hot.
How many?
Only two.
If she'd been that base commander, if she'd known, and he must have known, such a prize was coming, she'd have had a net of every available craft, just in case. Sirkin slumped in dull misery on her bunk. It was impossible. She had checked and rechecked that course. She had paid attention to every warning in the charts. She could not have made such an error. But here they were, and of course, she had to admit the logic of it. The captain had decided she was responsible. She was the traitor.
I am not!
But no one would believe her. All the miseries of the past months landed on her again. Amelie's weakness and Amelie's betrayal. And then Amelie's death. The way that mutilated face and body looked in the morgue. Hot tears rolled down Sirkin's face. She didn't notice. And she had tried so hard to work her way out of it. She had acted cheerful. She had gone on working. She had even enjoyed, and felt guilty for enjoying, those visits with Lord Thornbuckle's daughter. Her hand strayed to the locket Brunn had bought her. Inside was the lock of Amelie's hair Meharry had snipped. Brunn. If Brunn were here, she wouldn't believe it was Sirkin's fault. Except it had to be. She knew Oblo and the others couldn't be doing it. They were too loyal to Captain Serrano. Besides, why would they start playing tricks now, when everything had gone so well on the way back from Cerealis? It made no sense. She knew she was no traitor. She knew she had done her work carefully. Yet the work she did came undone somehow, between one watch and the next. And if it wasn't Oblo or Issy Guar, who could it be? Was she going crazy? Was she losing her memory? Had someone planted some kind of mind control in her? The thought terrified her. She sank into a daze of misery, staring at the opposite bulkhead.
I know you didn't do that.
Lady Cecilia. She had not seen Lady Cecilia since she came aboard, and the shock brought her out of herself. She rolled off the bunk and stood up, instantly dizzy from time she'd spent motionless.
Sit down. Don't faint.
Sirkin struggled with her dizziness and finally did what she was told, slumping back to the bunk. Lady Cecilia carried a set of keying wands and looked as smug as her condition allowed.
You shouldn't. The captain will be really angry.
Let her.
But she's right. Something is wrong, and it must have been my fault because I know Oblo wouldn't.
She is wrong. I told her.
Did she say you could let me out?
Maybe the captain had found out what really happened. Maybe it wasn't her fault after all. Lady Cecilia's face contorted with what she wanted to say and couldn't.
Not that. Earlier. She doesn't know I came here. She is wrong about you.
How do you know?
Age.
Lady Cecilia grinned a death's head grin.
You are not that kind of girl.
She held up her hand, a clear signal for Sirkin to listen without interrupting.
Who joined ship lost?
Vivi Skoterin, just before we left Rockhouse. She's from the ship Captain Serrano had in the RSS. She's an environmental tech.
Where now?
On the bridge, I expect. Oblo asked her to stand in for me as navigation second during the jumps.
No, mistake.
Well, she's not trained as a navigator. But all she has to do is check the numbers as Oblo enters them.
No, that is the mistake.
Serkan wasn't getting all that Lady Cecilia meant.
She is problem.
Serkan stared at the old lady.
Skoterin? But she's one of them. She served with them before. They trust her.
Even as she said it, she saw the flaw in that. They trusted her, but it didn't make her trustworthy.
She couldn't have. Oh, she brought me those charts. The ones I used to set up the course. The wrong course.
Lady Cecilia nodded.
She made you look bad. Captain did not look further. Mistake.
It's too late, though. We're going to be attacked, captured.
Lady Cecilia's head jerked through a slow shake.
Not captured. It is too convenient if we disappear. Prince, me, and all.
We do have weapons. We might fight free. Oh, that is, if Vivi hasn't...
She would have. But, Prince, help.
Cecilia turned the hover chair, opened the door again, and started out as Serkan stood up uncertainly.
Come with me.
Once the enemy ships began their stalk, Harris gave no further thought to her passengers. At the end, if capture seemed likely, she'd make sure they didn't suffer. But now she had a battle to fight. Maybe.
How far do we have to go before we can jump?
A long way. My first approximation is over 7 hours. Things got moons as massive as your average planet. We don't want to be wrong.
Fine. Keep an eye on it. Arcadi, what are we facing?
Right now, just two. But of course, our scans are skewed at this relative velocity. Looks like they knew what vector to expect for our insertion, but not how much V we'd have on us. They're running parallel and catching up. And no, we can't outrun them. Not if they're the usual CH cruiser weight.
He transferred his scan data to her display.
You can see the weaponry. All hot and ready to fire. Want me to bring them up? I don't think it's enough to scare them off, but...
No, we can't bluff. But maybe we can surprise them when it counts.
Harris glanced over at his boards, where the status lights showed ship's weapons as strings of green lights, each column tipped with one yellow.
I wonder why they didn't take us when we dropped out. The logical thing for them to do was blow us away. No one knew we would be inside Benignity space. And if they did know, they'd shrug and go, oops. If we quietly disappear, it solves a lot of problems for some powerful people.
I'd be glad to quietly disappear if I could figure out how. Vivi, pull up this section in Shermer's Atlas, will you? Maybe they've got something.
Yes, sir.
Harris watched as Skoterin picked her way around the backup navigation board, punching first one key, then another. Slow. Of course, she didn't know the board well. It wasn't her specialty. If only Serkan, the good Serkan, had been there. But no use wishing.
What the...
Son of a...
Suddenly, Janice and Mahari both started tapping at their boards.
What?
Harris could see from here that the weapons boards had changed color. Green lights had gone orange. The yellow lights at the top had gone to blue. The system was locked down, non-functional. Petrus turned to glare at Harris.
Damn her. What do you want to bet she had a control tab to her quarters?
No bet. Go down there and...
And what? Kill her?
Get it fixed. Call Mr. Guar to the bridge, Oblo. You need more experienced help. Skoterin, get back to Mr. Haidar and tell him to unlock the small arms. Bring us each a weapon and start stacking the excess in the corridor. Here's the key wand for the weapons locker.
Yes, Captain.
Skoterin hurried away. Petrus grabbed a toolkit off the bulkhead and followed her.
They stripped our beacon. Maybe they wanted to be sure they had the right ship.
Maybe.
Harris, Serkan isn't in her quarters, and I can't find any control tab. She might have been somewhere else when you locked the doors.
Harris tried to remember if she'd actually checked the personal monitors to confirm Serkan's location. She didn't know.
Or she might have gotten out. If she's been planning this, she might have key wands.
Janice sat up from the deck under his control boards.
I'm not finding a hard tap. Not one single thread that shouldn't be here. Of course, a directed magnetic pulse could do that, but it would have to be close.
A control override would work, anywhere between here and the weapons themselves.
Mahari, too, was half under her console, prodding at things.
But not on this ship. It's not like a ship designed for fighting. We had no regional alternative nodes. Remember how we had to route the cables all over the place? To knock the whole board down like that, it'd have to be intercepting signals pretty high up, which ought to show as an additional cable or be a pulse signal from somewhere on the bridge.
Mahari's face popped up from beneath her console.
Mine's clean. I see what you mean, Arcady. We put in that shielding. If it's pulse, it has to be on the bridge somewhere.
What about a secondary? Something exterior to signal a controller on the bridge through the regular optical cables and set off a pulse signal?
Might be complicated, though. Doesn't always work even on our ships. What's Sirkin's secondary training?
She could do it. I had her crawling through all the computer controls on the first voyage. She knows as much about this ship's electrical and electronic layout as I do. The only thing she might not know is the weapon systems you installed when she wasn't aboard.
Intruder, familiar ship Harper Valley.
Just in case we didn't know who we were. Now what, Captain?
Well, they didn't blow us away straight off. Let's see what they do with this. Send them a voice burst, just as we did with Levati.
That might buy a few seconds, but they needed hours. She got back on the intercom.
Petrus, better link with Skoderin and get yourself a weapon. Wherever Sirkin is, she might be dangerous.
Right.
He had left Sirkin's quarters, she saw on the personnel monitor, and headed toward the main service corridor. She couldn't find Sirkin now, but that made sense. She'd have taken off the tagger and probably done something to keep the automatic sensors from recognizing her. Harris hadn't yet entered the data for all Cecilia's medical team, so she didn't know who made up that cluster of dots outside Mr. Smith's quarters, the cluster now moving along a corridor toward the service area.
Lady Cecilia, please stay in your quarters and get your medical team with you. It is not safe to wander around right now.
Intruder ship Harper Valley, cease maneuvers or we will fire on you.
So tactful.
I've got the last squirt out of her. Trying to get in the shadow of that moon.
Which you hope no one is hiding behind. I would be.
Swing out, then?
Costs us V, gains us space. I hate the feeling we're being driven into a preset trap.
Fine.
He made adjustments on his board. Mahari straightened.
That's odd.
What?
You touched your board and mine flickered. Do something on the other one.
Isagai Gwar, on the secondary, shrugged and fed in a query.
Aha!
Mahari reached for her own toolkit and fiddled with it.
So that's it. It's controlled from your board, Issy. Let me get at it.
He pushed back willingly, and Mahari ran her instruments over it.
She must have set this up with a time delay, so anyone touching the board after a certain time would set up a signal locking up weapons control. Clever. If she'd been better at the patches, my board wouldn't have flickered, and we'd never have found it. Glad she was careless about this, too.
They're targeting.
I'm not wasting time.
Mahari plucked the overlay off the top of the secondary board and prodded something underneath with delicacy.
This little beauty? I don't want to blow anything if it's wired that way. Can just now slip out.
She slipped the tiny object into her pocket. Harris saw, before Janice could speak, his board come live. One by one, the orange lights turned green, one column after another, as the weapons ran through self-checks and warmed.
Code 3 as soon as you can, Mr. Janice.
Mahari's board began to green up, far slower than Harris wanted. Gwar was reassembling his console. Oblo wore an expression of limpid unconcern that Harris knew from earlier battles.
Last warning. Intruder ship cease maneuvering in 10 seconds, or we will fire on you.
Nicely calculated, that. The transmission lag was down to 8 seconds.
Here it goes.
On the large screen, the tracks of the other ships, the analysis of their weaponry. The first white-hot arcs, as two missiles lofted toward where they would be, one from each pursuer. Janice's board was almost completely green, the yellow dots lit now halfway across the top. Mahari shifted her board's controls to Janice and moved to stand by the bridge hatch.
Lockdown, Captain?
No. We've got a loyal crew out there.
Issy, your control. I can go out.
No. There's only one to worry about, and with any luck, she's dead.
Harris watched on the screen the enemy's missiles coming nearer. On Janice's board, the yellow dots turned red as the weapons came operational.
Let's just see.
Janice's finger stabbed at the board, and the two missiles seemed to stagger in their course, then swerve aside.
Yeah, still works fine.
If they could all be that easy.
That hadn't even required their offensive weaponry.
Then I couldn't play with my other little darlings. Oh, you would. Idiots.
Harris didn't interrupt with questions. The second wave of missiles had been launched before the enemy would have had time to get scan data back from the yacht's activated weapons. four this time, bracketing their expected course. These Arcadi dispatched with contemptuous ease. What mattered now was what else they would use. Their scans revealed optical and ballistic possibilities.
Response, Captain?
They could, of course, launch a counterattack. No one was there to remind her it was a bad idea to get into a slugfest with two larger ships.
Let's try to dodge their bullets and help them run low on ammunition. Why change what's working?
Harris kept an eye on Oblo's scanning screens. If that moon had held a trap, and if the pursuers had realized they weren't going into it, a third ship might come dashing out right about there. But they had trusted too much to their trap. The third ship had low relative V, and though boosting frantically, was caught deep in the well with little maneuverability.
There's a target, Mr. Janice, if you just want something to shoot at.
A bit chancy. I'd rather save what we've got for these two.
Just don't forget that third one. If it launches something at us, it could still hurt us.
Right, Captain.
In that long pause, while the enemy realized they had an armed ship and not a helpless victim to subdue, while the enemy commander, Harris imagined, cursed and chose an alternate plan, she had time to wonder why it was so quiet. Someone should have reported back by now. She called up the personnel monitor again and saw the cluster of green dots in exactly the wrong place, down in the service corridor near the weapons locker. What if Sirkin had attacked Lady Cecilia, or shot the clone, or was holding Lady Cecilia hostage?
Meharry.
Yes, Captain.
Harris pointed to the layout with the little green dots.
Get down there and find out what's going on, and break it up. First priority, secure the ship. Next, Lady Cecilia. Next, Mr. Smith.
Yes, sir!
Meharry's sleepy green eyes were wide awake now and eager. Oblo moved forward, but Harris waved him back.
No, we've got a battle up here too, and you can either do nav or weapons. Go help Janice for now.
Sirkin followed Lady Cecilia's chair out of her quarters with a mixture of reluctance and glee. It wasn't her fault. She hadn't made those mistakes, and she thought she knew, who had. But nobody would believe her, she was sure. And she doubted the captain would have the patience to let Lady Cecilia literally spell it out. If anyone came down here, they'd believe the worst of her, especially now that she was out of her quarters. Lady Cecilia's hover chair made swift progress along the corridor toward the main lounge. Sirkin looked over her head to see Mr. Smith and several of Lady Cecilia's medical team clumped together there. As she watched, they came forward, and Lady Cecilia reversed the chair, nearly hitting Sirkin.
Weapons. Where are the small arms lockers?
Sirkin knew that, but she wasn't sure what they were doing, or if it was right. He grinned at her, that famous grin she had seen on many a newscast, and punched her arm lightly.
Come on! We've got to get armed and keep whoever it is from taking the ship away from your captain!
She led the way back into crew country.
Skoderin. Joined the ship just before we left Rockhouse. Old crewmate.
One of the group that was court-martialed?
No, just demoted afterwards. Some enlisted were, she said.
What specialty?
Environmental systems.
They came out of that corridor into another, which angled downward. Harris would have recognized it as leading to the place where Ickland had died. Sirkin did not. She only knew they should take the turn to the right. The weapons lockers, filled with all those expensive oddments, as Janice had called them, on Cerealis, were that way, around a turn or two. Sirkin, sure of the way, went first. Mr. Smith came behind her, and then Lady Cecilia in her chair, surrounded by attendants. Around the last corner, Sirkin stopped abruptly. The weapons lockers were open, and on the deck lay Nazaru Haidar, face down and motionless, with blood pooled under his head. Mr. Smith pushed past her and knelt beside the fallen man. Sirkin edged forward, trying to remember to breathe, and one of the medical attendants rushed forward, opening a belt pack.
Just stop right there.
Sirkin looked up as Skoderin stepped out of an open hatch across from the weapons lockers. Skoderin had one of the weapons. Sirkin wasn't sure what it was, though she knew she'd seen its like in news clips and adventure cubes. It looked deadly enough, and Skoderin handled it as if it were a part of her body.
How very convenient. Just the people I wanted to see, and now you're all here together.
Skoderin had on a black mesh garment over her uniform. Sirkin found her mind wandering to it, wondering what it was. Skoderin looked right at her. Sirkin felt her heart falter in its beat.
Poor Brictus. You must continue to be the scapegoat a while longer, I fear. Pity that you went mad and murdered Lady Cecilia and the prince, or his clone, it doesn't much matter.
But I didn't do any of it!
Of course you didn't! Though I rather hoped you wouldn't figure that out until whatever afterlife you believe in.
But you were on her ship! How can you do this to her? To the others?
It is distasteful, I'll admit. I have nothing against Captain Serrano, even though she did manage to ruin my career as a deep agent. It's certainly not personal vengeance for having managed to arrange the deaths of two of my relatives.
Who?
Relatives I didn't particularly like, in fact. Though we do take family more seriously than some other cultures. Who scratches my brother, or cousin in this case, scratches me. You were there, Brigdis. Surely you remember the terrible death by poisoning of poor Ickland.
But you...
Enough. You two by Hydar. Move back over there.
Mr. Smith and the medical team member, Sirkin had not even had a chance to learn their names or positions, moved back near Lady Cecilia.
You, Brig, you stand by Hydar.
She was moving under the black, unseeing eye of that weapon, despite herself. She could hardly feel her body. She felt as if she were floating. Her foot bumped something. She looked down to find her shoe pressed against Hydar's head. He was breathing. She felt the warm breath even through the toe of her shoe. Her mind clung to that, like a child clinging to a favorite toy in a storm. One thing was normal. Hydar was alive.
Take one of those weapons from the rack and hit him.
Sirkin stared at Skodarin.
Go on, girl. They're not loaded. You can't hurt me with it. I want your fingerprints on it, along with his blood. Whack him in the head with it, hard.
No.
Do it now, or I'll shoot your precious Lady Cecilia.
You will anyway. Why should I help you?
I don't have time for this.
Skodarin leveled the weapon at Sirkin. Sirkin panicked, grabbed the nearest object in the rack, and threw it at Skodarin, just as Mr. Smith made a dive for her. When it was over, Sirkin felt very, very tired, and only slowly realized that she had been hit. That was her blood on the deck now, and she had to close her eyes just for a moment.